At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Herd Tell.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, we talk about overseas stuff a lot. We've been covering the UK, their policies, talking about that prime minister race in the Conservative Party. We don't always look at it from a policy and tax analysis, though, so we're going to turn to our friend over at the Tax Foundation, Sean Burry, joining us. He's an EU policy analyst there. He focuses on international tax issues, especially with Europe. Sean, great to have you with us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start right there. We talk about this stuff. Look, tax policy is one of those things. It gets wonky. There's charts. There's math. I don't like math. There's lots of big words. Why should we pay attention to overseas tax policy when we don't even have a real good grip on American tax policy, just to be honest about it?
It's a great question. I think the best way to think about it is tax policies that's passed internationally in other countries, while they apply to the companies and the citizens and value things that you buy in those countries, they also apply outside of those jurisdictions. So for example, a corporate tax rate in the UK might also apply to US companies that are doing business in the UK. So that's just one example, but there are many reasons why we should really care about what other countries are doing in tax policy.
Now, especially true with the UK, this gets complicated in a hurry, but just to give the background, we understand this is a post-Brexit issue. We don't know all the issues because they're still sorting them out. They're still trying to figure out things like trade unions and what such. But this is a big deal. It changed how a lot of things were doing with the EU, with the UK, and you know it trickles down. It affects how U.S. policy goes as well, right?
Absolutely. I think one of the main points here is really to focus in on the Good Friday Agreement. This has been brought up. I'm sure your listeners and your viewers know very well about Brexit and the Good Friday Agreement generally, but one aspect of it that outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson has talked about recently is reneging a bit on the deal that he came up with the EU when they left the EU, talking about how Northern Ireland trade would be regulated, talking about what that might mean for a hard border. And so while that's not necessarily tax policy directly, it certainly impacts trade, taxes, and the economy in a way that could definitely affect U.S. companies and also the politics of the U.S. On the other side, I know that when representatives from Ireland were in the United States previously over the last year, House Speaker Pelosi had mentioned that she was very much still in favor of the Good Friday Agreement. And if the U.K. did anything to ruin that agreement, it would certainly affect relations between the U.S. and the U.K. So that's just something also to keep in mind.
Yeah, Sean Burry joining us. Before we dig into the UK, though, let's talk about Water Europe for just a second, because taxes to, when we hear taxes, Americans, we think very certain things. We think our tax refunds, we think about, you know, withholding, we think about our W-2s, these sorts of things. Taxes in Europe are not only different, they're done very differently. You know, like when I lived in Germany, I had to do my VAT book because I had vouchers because I was military. You have VAT taxes. You have a universal health care that has to be paid for. The tax system in Europe is different. So when we say taxes to a European, you've studied this, you've been over there, they're hearing almost a completely different concept in taxes than what we really think of, right?
Yeah, I think in Europe, the concept of taxes is less about should the government have a role in my life, for example, in healthcare or in transportation policy or in things that Americans might not think about so much as being the role of government. In Europe, those things are generally assumed to be the role of government. And therefore, they understand that taxes play a role in paying for those things. So, for example, in Scandinavian countries, they have a high tax rate on individuals. For example, in Denmark, I believe it's almost 55%, the top income tax bracket. And that applies to 1.3 times the median the average salaries in that country. So equivalently, if you made over $82,000 in the United States, you'd be being taxed at 55% of that income if you lived in that country. However, they also understand that those tax dollars do go to benefits that they receive on the other end. And so I think Americans generally are a little more skeptical of giving so much money to the government. And that might also be because they don't necessarily see all the benefits that Europeans do on the other side.
Yeah, Sean Bray from the Tax Foundation joining us. Give us a big picture overview, though. Of course, the EU, based mostly out of Brussels, you have Germany, which is the economic engine that drives the EU. The UK stepped out of it. The EU, the UK, America, just kind of stack up their various tax policies against each other. Who do you think's getting it right? Who do you think's struggling a little bit tax policy-wise between those three?
So the Tax Foundation actually does what we call the International Tax Competitive Index every year. And this ranks the competitiveness of all OECD countries' tax systems, including obviously the United States, the UK, and Germany. And the UK actually ranked 22nd on that list out of 37 OECD countries. And the problem wasn't necessarily their rates. It was more their tax base. They have a lot of issues in terms of having a broad base, which at the Tax Foundation, we believe in pro-growth tax policy, and that includes broad-based tax policies. So Germany definitely has a more sound tax system than the UK, for example, when it comes to competitiveness. And that's reflected in their export-oriented economy. The US, after the 2017 TCJA, the Tax Cut and Jobs Reform Act, that was passed under President Trump, that really moved the United States up on our competitive list. So I think at this point, each system has its benefits, each system has its downfalls. But the UK of the three probably has the most work to do at this particular moment, which is why this election in the UK is so important.
Like we talked about before, tax policy, you know, again, it gets wonky, it gets ideological, it gets theorized really quickly. The UK has some really practical built-in reasons why they would have those issues. Number one, this is going to be shocking to some folks. It's an island. So you got it, you know, everything's got it, you know, just basic transportation in and out. It's just a different system than Germany, which is centrally located. Number two is it's not really a big country population-wise, so their tax base is decently small when you compare it to other countries. When you're looking at tax policy, sometimes we just overlook kind of the bare-bones stuff like population, like geography, right?
I think that's right. There's a good argument to be made for eliminating carve-outs, specifically for, as you mentioned previously, the value-added taxes, which is a consumption tax. We actually don't have that here in the United States. It would be most similar to a sales tax. But European countries all have, for the most part, a value-added tax. And one of the big questions when it comes to value-added tax reform is whether they have, how many carve-outs they have. So, for example, in some countries, when you buy groceries, if you're under a certain policy, for example, in a high inflation time period, some governments will pass VAT carve-outs. And so you won't get taxed on those particular things. I think the closest thing here in the United States would be the going back to school tax holiday, where you remove the consumption tax for going back to school goods. So in the UK, that's really where they should focus as well, is understanding that carve-outs, and therefore not having as broad of a base, can be a big issue.
So these carve-outs, though, talking to Sean Bray Tax Foundation, these carve-outs, though, obviously, that's not only a powerful policy tool, that's a powerful political tool, because you're really putting the government thumb on certain things, not always in a bad way, sometimes in a good way, but that's a lot of political power on top of being an economic indicator also, right?
For sure. It is certainly government intervention into the free market, if you want to look at it that way. As you mentioned, there are reasons to do it. There are certain products that you can make an argument for. But oftentimes, governments use it as a political tool, either right before an election or during times of high inflation that sometimes are caused by those government policies themselves. And it's important just to realize that VAT income tax or VAT taxes is one of the most stable revenue sources for our government. So every time that you add another carve out on consumption, the government will have that much less of a stable revenue source to later draw on for social spending.
Yeah, I think it's an increase here because I don't know the average taxes as a revenue stream. They just look at it as something they do. They may look at their tax check where they get their refund. Talk about, though, and explain how important that is, because the government 100% looks at taxes as a revenue stream. This is something that's so important. Look, this is the very first thing they put in the Constitution after what the legislator does, after what Congress does. The very first thing they did, and the reason they had to make the constitutional system out of the Articles of Confederation, was over how to tax and how to raise revenue for the government. That's what our whole system of government was based off of. Talk about just for a second, because I think this is a real basic concept, but if you're going to talk tax policy, we really need to get a good foundation in what that means, that this is a revenue stream first and foremost, right?
Absolutely. I think that's really, when people ask me what I do for my job, they assume that I'm a CPA, which I'm not. And that's because many people view taxes through, as you had mentioned previously, through an individual lens. What does it mean for me? What does it mean for my paycheck? How much money am I paying to the government? But people generally don't think about the tax system as a whole. And as you point out correctly, the tax system is a revenue source, and it's all about how the government can raise revenue. This can be considered sort of a dirty word in the United States sometimes. People wonder why the United States needs to have revenue. Why should the government need that anyway? But in Europe, it's more understood that the government needs revenue. However, at Tax Foundation, there are better and worse ways to raise revenue. For example, we see that corporate taxes on corporations is one of the least efficient ways to raise revenue for the government, because it slows down investment, it slows down economic growth. And so therefore, we tend to rely more at the Tax Foundation on policy choices that focus on consumption taxes and other broad-based principal tax policies that can raise stable revenue even through a downturn, because that's when the government actually needs the money the most, when they're paying out in benefits during downturns.
Yeah, Sean Bray joining us. We're going to get into the UK in just a second, but since you just brought it up, it's on everybody's mind, so let's just go there. Words like inflation, words like recession, people don't automatically start thinking tax policy, but tax policy has a tremendous effect on these things because, again, main revenue stream. So when you start talking about fiscal policy, you got to talk about the revenue stream, just like you're balancing your budget at home, although we know the government doesn't do a great job of that. What is the role of tax policy in a debate like this? We just did the Build Back Mansion, or whatever you want to call the Inflation Reduction Act, which we can debate whether it's going to reduce inflation or not, but this was a piece of it. How are we going to tax corporations? Tax policy in a time like this is really important, isn't it?
It is absolutely important. As someone from the Tax Foundation, I think we think it's always important. But for the general public and the general debate, this was talked about a lot in the Inflation Reduction Act. As you mentioned, Joe Manchin finally came around to supporting it, as well as Senator Sinema. And the book tax that's a part of this bill that just signed by the president. We, in our estimation at Tax Foundation, our federal team has gone over the numbers with our modeling tools, and they show that there's minimal to no inflation reduction in the longer term. We think this is a problem for the economy generally, because inflation hurts a lot of people in a lot of different ways. It basically a tax on everybody. So tax policy does play a large role in this. And there are certain taxes that increase inflation and some that decrease inflation. And so it's just a matter of balancing those out in certain times of inflation and also looking at the short to medium windows of a given policy.
Yeah. Sean Burry joining us. All right, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. We're going to get into the UK. They got a little bit of a political race going over there, who the next prime minister is going to be. One of the top issues they're talking about in these debates and Hastings, taxes over and over again, why we should care, why we should pay attention to it. We'll also loop back, talk a little bit more about American tax policy. Sean Burry from Tax Foundation joining us on Herd Tell. More with him right after this. Folks, if you've listened to the Herd Tell program, you've heard our friend Gabriella Hoffman, but you need to make sure you're checking out her podcast, District of Conservation. It's a podcast exploring the nuances of true conservation efforts from D.C. and beyond. From topic discussions to exclusive interviews with conservation and energy newsmakers, Gabriella keeps listeners appraised of the latest news stories while elevating important voices. Listen to District of Conservation on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are played. Welcome back to Herd Tell. We're talking to our friend Sean Burry from the Tax Foundation. Sharp guy's been overseas. Knows, I'm told he speaks French and Deutsch, but we're not going to test that because I've had a head injury since then and my Sprechensee isn't what it used to be, my friend. But let's go back overseas, the UK. We've been talking about this with our UK contributors. Outside of the cost of living crisis, they're talking about taxes more than I can ever remember politics in the UK talking about taxes. It's really kind of phenomenal to watch, especially for the Conservative Party. Why should an American audience pay attention to something like the UK's tax policy? We talked about it with the EU a little bit, but just break it down for us. Why is it important that one of the leaders of one of our closest allies paying attention to what their tax policies are?
Yeah, I think one reason that Americans should really care about what's going on in the UK at the moment in terms of tax policy is that London specifically, but the UK more broadly, was always seen and used by American companies abroad as the gateway to the EU. Now that the UK has left the EU, some rearrangement has taken place. Some companies have moved from London to Dublin or to the continent of Europe, but it's still a hub for American businesses operating over in Europe. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. For example, certain tax policies, the language, cultural similarities between American business and the UK. So there's a lot of reasons why American companies choose the UK to do business with their overseas partners in Europe. However, one of the main discussions right now in this election race is talking about whether to change the corporate tax rate in the UK. And it's currently at 19%, and Rishi Sunak is proposing to up that to 25% by April 2023. Liz Truss, on the other hand, has said that she will not do that. And so it's really a question of how competitive the UK business climate is going to be going forward, which obviously directly impacts US companies and their investment decisions and where they locate in Europe. So there's definitely an economic impact on not only the UK, but the United States based on what their tax policies are.
Yeah, and a good recent headline example for the average person that doesn't keep up with economics, when the Russian sanctions of the oligarchs started, almost all of them went through London because that's where almost all of them do their banking internationally. So London and the UK has always kind of been that central hub, although some of it's moved to Frankfurt and other places. Let's talk about the corporate tax rate though. Compare it for a second so folks know, because I'm, you know, something like 60% of Americans can't name the three branches of government. I'm pretty sure most Americans probably don't know what the corporate tax rate is. So just compare it, the UK tax rate to the American tax rate. What are we talking about? What's the similarities and what are the differences?
Yeah. So I think a good place to start actually is, referring back to our index. Actually, in the OECD average is around 23% this past year. So the UK going from 19 to 25% under Rishi Sunak would actually be increasing the corporate tax rate above even the OECD average. Currently, the United States is around 21%. President Biden has talked about changing that recently, but for now it's at 21%. So that would certainly put the UK at a disadvantage relative to the rest of the United States and the OECD more broadly when it comes to tax competition.
Yeah. When you hear somebody like Rishi Sunak, he was the head of the Exeter, which is, you know, kind of like our Treasury, although a much more powerful role. He's a smart guy, Stanford educated. He knows these numbers backwards and forwards. How much of this is political and how much of this is good policy? Because they keep talking about taxes, so the appetite is there. They have the cost of living. Is the policies they're putting out matching what the country needs that's having a cost of living crisis, though?
Without being too political on my side, of course, we try at the Tax Nation just to take the numbers as they are. I think that there are merits to both sides. However, in a time like this, for example, Liz Truss's plan is to keep the rates where they are, to lower tax rates. And lowering tax rates in a time of inflation can have negative effects. However, on the other side, for Mr. Sunak, if you're going to raise taxes, especially on corporations, that can dampen growth and dampen investment in the UK in the short to medium term. And so once inflation hopefully goes away sooner rather than later, you might end up with a UK that's uncompetitive and can't draw as much investment decisions in the UK as it once would have done. So I think on both sides, of course, these decisions are political, but even from an economics perspective, they both have their benefits and negatives.
Yeah, Sean Bray joining us. Let's zoom back out to the EU. You've wrote about this before, the corporate income tax rates in Europe more broadly. No real surprises here. Germany's number two, France is number three. These are traditional powers, traditional large economies. They're allies of us, obviously. As this new EU post-Brexit emerges, and especially with events like with what Russia and what's going on in UK, in the UK, especially with Russia and what's going on in the Ukraine, does the EU itself need to review its tax policy structures, both corporately and as a unit? Because obviously the world is kind of changing around them a little bit. Where are they at on tax policy as a combined EU?
That's a great question. So I think the first thing that's important to know for your listeners and your viewers is that the EU actually doesn't have taxing power per se. It's a member state competence. So in the United States, for example, the equivalent would be if only the state governments could raise taxes, but the federal government could not. That's generally what's happening in the EU broadly. However, that has been called into question recently, as you mentioned, because of the war and because of other surrounding kind of geopolitical effects that are around the EU. So there is a push within the EU and the European Commission, especially in the European Parliament, to look at what they call own resources. So own resources is a way for the EU to gain money for itself into the EU budget. And so instead of relying on member states and their governments, for example, the French government or the German government, the EU is contemplating policies to raise its own money for the EU's purposes themselves. They already have a certain amount of what they call own resources that mostly comes from governments directly to the EU, but they are looking to expand their own resources to combat some of these other issues in the world. So that's an ongoing debate in the EU that has a lot of different consequences economically and politically.
Yeah, it's funny you said the member states, because again, that's almost sounds like the Article of Confederation, which is what brought us our current system. That was the problem. They couldn't raise enough revenue for the federal government. They didn't have power to enforce it, among other issues, but that was kind of the big one. Let's bring this back to the U.S. for a minute, though. How are we talking about taxes and tax policy in America right now in the discourse? We don't really talk about it as much. I don't think we talk about it as much as we used to. Like, we don't even have politicians just say, let's lower taxes, is just a buzzword like we used to. There just doesn't seem to be the same discussion that there used to be maybe in a previous generation of politics. Is that a good or a bad sign that we don't seem to really talk about tax policy unless it's a specific piece of legislation or something like that? Am I imagining that, or is that a trend?
It might be a trend. I'm not. I don't have a personal opinion per se on that. I haven't studied it too much, but I think in general, our politics is divided, obviously, in all kinds of social ways and political ways. I don't think taxes is necessarily a an attention drawing topic for some people in our times. The debate tends to be focused on the spending side of things. And of course, taxes, nobody wants to talk about those because it's much easier to sell politically a spending program rather than a tax increase to pay for those spending programs. So I think when it comes to politicians and the way we, in our discourse, we talk about taxes, it's not always the most popular thing to have to explain that we're going to be taking more of your money if in a tax increase, or it can also be very complex and very in the weeds. And I think for most people, it's not very interesting. So especially in a political world where headlines grab the attention of most people, tax policy generally doesn't make it onto the front pages.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Yeah, Sean Bray joining us. All right, the downside of that, of course, is I'm not great at math, but I do understand our fiscal house as a nation is not in particularly good shape right now. Unless we cut spending, rein in government, and or something really strange happens, at some point taxes are going to have to go up just to balance the sheets in here. How do we have that conversation with the average American citizen, do you think? Again, taxes and tax policy, that's one of those wonky things that you just said it. People don't really want to talk about it because they don't like it, number one. And number two, we have a ridiculously complex system. How do we start having that conversation, though? Because there's also this reality bomb coming down the road that at some point the tax system that we have is insufficient to the government we have. That's just kind of a basic math problem, right?
Yeah, I think one way that we at Tax Foundation like to talk about taxes is in a pro-growth manner. And so we have principal tax policy ideas that we advocate for, that we try to educate policymakers on. And all of our policy ideas really point in the direction of pro-growth, economic opportunity. And so I think that's a way of talking to the average person about tax policy, is when you have a tax system that not only generates the right amount of revenue for the government based on its spending bills and its spending programs, but also a way that encourages innovation, encourages investment, stimulates job creation. I think that's something that most Americans can easily relate to. And I think in general, think it's a good idea. I don't know of many people who would say, I want a tax regime that discourages businesses from creating jobs that I might be able to apply for in the future. So I think talking about it in ways that really relate to the average person and what it means for their family, what it means for buying food, putting it on the table, I think that's where policymakers should really start talking about taxes in a layman's way.
Yeah, and in that vein, Sean Bray joining us. How detrimental to the conversation is it when we buzzwords things like, oh, corporations pay their fair share? Well, of course, everybody wants that, but that doesn't actually mean anything when you go to write a policy. It's just kind of a buzzword. Tax the rich, deadbeats that aren't pulling their own weight when it comes to individuals. When you're talking about policies, though, the way we've become a buzzwordy social media debate society, that's not really helping anything, is it?
Not really. For example, actually in the EU, they have what's called the fair taxation kind of approach as we speak. This has come into the debates about proposals on wealth taxes. talking about corporate taxes, increasing them specifically on American companies, not only in the just general sense, but also in the digital space, talking about the tech companies that operate in Europe that are American. And so this is a an ongoing conversation, and not only in the United States, but also in Europe. And I think it's important to understand that many journalists write articles talking about, for example, how much money Amazon paid in taxes last year. And a lot of times that misrepresents the actual way that taxes are paid. That's a lot of the times you have to consider, for example, in our tax code, we have incentives to invest and to buy machinery and to build factories. And we give tax credits for those things to businesses. So usually journalists tend not to focus on those, and they rather focus on the top rate, which can be lowered based on incentives that our tax code gives companies to invest rather than pay taxes directly to the government. So I think it's important to always have a context when you're talking about tax policy and rates and effective rates, especially when we talk about corporations and their fair share or wealthy individuals and things like that. It's not to say that people shouldn't pay their fair share and they shouldn't do what the law requires them to do, but I think it's important just to understand that there are ways of reducing your tax bill overall that are productive for the economy and that are encouraged by our tax code legally.
Yeah, let's round this up with a little practical application. People are scared because the economy is a little uncertain right now. It may not be as bad as some people think. It's bad for some people, but not others, which is part of the problem. And while we have weird economic numbers like, you know, labor shortages and low unemployment at the same time, you know, people are confused and that makes them a little scared sometimes. What's a practical way, something they should be watching for either in the media or in government reporting when it comes to their taxes that they should be actually watching out for? Turn the noise down for us a little bit. What's something in a government policy? Maybe it's something in the Inflation Reduction Act. Maybe it's something that's policy-wise coming up. It is an election year, so people are talking about lots of policies. What's something people should be really paying attention to and watching for their own sakes going forward here in the next near future?
I think one of the most important things that the average person can watch for that doesn't necessarily apply to them directly in terms of income taxes, but something that's been talked about a lot is how we treat investment decisions and how we tax those decisions. One policy that I think everyone should be watching out for, especially in an election year, is how they will treat full expensing in the tax code. And full expensing is really a good tax policy for pro-growth. It's principled. It allows businesses to recoup a lot of the tax money on their investments that stimulate jobs, that stimulate economic activity, and generally do much better for the economy. So I think that's something that's been tossed around a lot in these discussions with Build Back Better and now the Inflation Reduction Act. The president and Republicans have been going back and forth about how to treat full expensing in the tax code going forward. And so I think that's really important because full expensing is a good way to stimulate growth, stimulate the economy, create jobs, and is very efficient in that sense.
Yeah. Sean Bray, Tax Foundation. Great stuff today. Appreciate your time. Let folks know where they can follow you and what you got going on until we see you again.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm not on social media, but on our Tax Foundation website, we have an EU landing page, which actually includes all of our EU material. That's where you'll find most of my publications. And I look forward to coming back whenever you'll have me.
Yep, we threw a lot of hard questions at it, and you answered them so well that even I understood most of it. There's a couple things in there I'm going to have to go Google. I'm not going to lie, some of the policy stuff. But we will link to all of this in the show notes, including his writing. Make sure you read it all in full. Sean Bray, Tax Foundation, thank you so much for the time, sir.
I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.